Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
I walk 47 miles of barbed wire, use a cobra snake for a necktie. Got a brand new house on the roadside, made from rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new chimney made on top, made from a human skull. Now come on, baby, let's take a little walk and tell me, who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? Eileen took me by the hand and said, ooh, daddy, I understand. Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? Do you love? And the night was blue, and around the corner an ice wagon flew. A bump was a hit, Lord, and somebody screamed. You should have heard just what I seen. Now who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? I got a tombstone hand and a graveyard mind. I live long enough and I ain't scared of dying. Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love?
Step on a nail or something. Sorry, that was Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks. Who Do You Love? It was released as a single in February 1963 on Roulette Records. It sounded a bit painful, that.
He did.
Nice guitar on that, though. Quite forthright guitar.
Yeah, it's got that treble thing going on.
What's he doing?
Well, it's Robbie Robertson, of course. And the reason why we're playing this track is that the whole evening is dedicated to Robbie Robertson because he passed away last week.
Yeah.
You know, legend of the American music industry in general. That's North and South, of course, although he's Canadian. And he's, you know, such a legend. He really is. And just talking about a guitar sound.
Yeah.
It reminds me very much of a guitar sound that I put on a track called The Man. From my, you know, and I've never heard this track before.
That's
the only
weird.
Reason why this came up was the fact, you know, it was the first band he really recorded with any great success, you know, yeah. Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks, and it's Robbie Robertson. So, and I listened to it and I thought, shit, that's now sound like. So if you get 2 minutes, just go back to our discography and look at an album called The Knife. And it's by me, Simon Campbell, and you'll hear a track called The Man, and you listen to the guitar on that and compare it.
It's weird.
Who ripped it off? Well, I think I took some of the licks off Alvin Lee, who's clearly got the licks from Robbie. Anyway, there we are. And I think Robbie got the licks from that the guitar player who was with the old blues guy, which will come back to me in a sec. Yeah, anyway, everybody steals from everybody else. Yeah, so that's really good. Nick a lick, yeah.
So for this show, it's like we both really didn't know much about the detail about Robbie Robertson. So he was actually made Order of Canada, OC, and he was the lead guitarist for Bob Dylan in the mid-late 60s and early 70s. He was the guitarist and songwriter with the band from their inception until 1978. and also a solo artist. And this is something I didn't know. His work with the band was instrumental in creating the Americana music genre.
Yeah.
So that's the band. That's Americana. That's what you've got. And Robbie was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Canadian Music Hall of Fame as a member of the band, and also on his own with the Canada's Walk of Fame. And he's ranked 59th in Rolling Stone magazine's list of the 100 greatest guitarists. Now, I don't like lists. I don't believe in this, really. I just think what it does is it might just identify to you these people exist and then you can go and check them out. But it's so subjective, really, and the greatest is like... No, but Robbie Robertson apparently was ahead of his time back in the day, especially because he wasn't... He was actually... on tour. We'll go into that into the next song, but he's led quite an interesting life, this chap.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people said he became a guitar virtuoso and all that sort of carry on. But, you know, as I was saying before, he actually took a lot of his stuff from the blues guitarist Willie Johnson, Howlin' Wolf, and that was the artist I was just struggling to remember before, the legendary Howlin' Wolf. How I forgot who it was, anyway. But it was, you know, he really has got a sound. The interesting thing is, he's not really a lead guitar player, in my humble opinion, because when you listen to any of the stuff he's done with the band, any of the stuff he's really done, he's more of that all-round guitar player type of dude, you know, a bit of a Ronnie Wood. He's definitely more of a Ronnie Wood than an Eric Clapton, in my opinion, you know. And on there, yeah, it's some nice solo work, but it you know, and it. But is he a guitar legend? Is he a Jeff Beck? I don't think so. You know, is he a Ronnie Wood? Certainly. And Ronnie Wood is, you know, he's probably one of the top five guitar players in the world. So I'm not doing him down by any stretch of the imagination. But it is interesting, and of course, you know, he is a huge. A connection with Canada, because of course, you know, being Canadian and all the other people that are Canadian, you know, Neil Young,
Joni.
Joni, there's loads of Canadian artists that you think are American, but they're not.
No.
You know, these guys created Americana, but they weren't American. They were Canadian, which, where does that come from? I don't know.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan, Like a Rolling Stone, from Live 1966, the Royal Albert Hall concert, released on October 1988 on the Columbia record label. It was a bootleg originally, but it really recorded at the Free Trade Hall in Manchester. It's the fact that nobody thinks anywhere exists outside London, certainly in America. So, to all our American friends here, this was recorded at the Free Trade Hall in Manchester, which is now a fucking hotel. They've destroyed it and made a hotel. The Sex Pistols started at the, well, an abseminal performance at the Free Trade Hall. Bob Dylan, loads of people. I've seen loads of bands at Free Trade Hall. Anyway, this features the Hawks. Basically, it was kind of the band, but it wasn't, because there was no Levon Helm in it at this point. That's right. So this was the Hawks backing Bob Dylan. His voice is shocking. It's always shocking. It always, every time I listen to it, I thought, God, you can't sing that fella. But he's got a voice, and it's, but you know exactly who it is, and there's nobody else could sing these songs like he does. There's not. I know loads of people covered it, covered songs, and you know this, tambourine, all that sort of stuff, you know, and they make a great job of them, but it's not like old Bob. And just before we carry on here, I just want to talk a little bit about the guitar player, because I think this illustrates the fact of Robbie Robertson's style. Because if you listen, he's doing some fills and stuff in between the vocals, you know. Sometimes he crashes the vocal a little bit. At the end, he does a little bit of a solo. But it's more of a chordal solo. He doesn't actually do like a rock and roll solo, if you know what I mean. And bearing in mind at the time, you know, 1966, it was that time when all the bands were, you know, had great guitar players, you know. Eric Clapton was kicking around, the Yardbirds, Jeff Beck, all these people who really were technically and more adept than him at that style. But here, he was perfect.
Yes. And also, this is the other thing you've got to take into account with the whole this particular tour as well, is that Dylan for the first time was playing electric sets, so the first half was acoustic
indeed,
and he got loads of boos when he went electric. When he played electric, it was just like it was what were you telling me yesterday?
Well, this is the classic one where they actually recorded it, because it was a recorded concert, and somebody cries Judas
yes
at the beginning, but if you listen to the end of that, that he turned them around by the end,
yeah,
because that was real applause. It was real, and they were actually enjoying it, because they just weren't expecting it.
No,
you know, and I think that's the thing.
But isn't it funny that the passion that you've got with the music of that day, and it's like I watched an interview with Robbie Robertson yesterday. I watched quite a bit actually, just to try and get a sense of him. And he was saying that when he went on tour with Bob, he's like, he said to them, whatever you do, don't stop playing. And because they'd worked hard, they knew. I mean, they played and toured more, and they were tight, really, really tight band. So you know, they knew how to do it. But he said it was just, you got used to it, but if you know, it was a bit weird at first. It was like, what? There's all these people booing, what's going on? You know, and just carrying on playing, head down and getting on with it, and getting on with the gig. And that went on for months and months and months.
Well, you know, when we talk about the birth of Canadiana, which I've now renamed it, because I'm not going to call it Americana anymore. Let's call it Canadiana, because that's the truth. You know, Roy Robertson on guitar, Garth Hudson on organ, Richard Manuel on piano, Rick Danko on bass, and Mickey Jones, you know, Levon Helm, on drums on this particular recording.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the backing, it's actually a bit of a mess. Is it tight? Yeah, because it sort of grooves along and all that. But it's actually a mess because you've got all these people playing. You've got, you see, and this is the thing about Americana, and the fact that here, when it was starting to develop, you did have a piano player and an organ player. It's unusual that you get that these days. You have an organ player or a piano player. It's very rare that you get sort of the two. And when they do, they've got to really work together very well. And, you know, and I'm not saying this is, I mean, it's a great performance because it's history. We're listening here to rock and roll history. We're listening to a legendary performance at the Free Trade Hall, not the Royal Albert Hall, which is in London. Free Trade Hall is Manchester.
Manchester.
In England.
Manchester.
North England.
Manchester.
Where I'm born. Yes! Anyway, so... But it was kind of developing, this sound, you know.
Yeah, because it was growing, wasn't it?
Yeah, and later on, of course, you know, what we're going to talk about in a minute, about the band's actual albums that they did themselves, yeah. It's a completely different situation. But this, in my opinion, is a little bit of a mess.
That's interesting you say that, you know. No, yeah, great. I know what you're saying, because when I was reading about it as well, they were trying to find their sound, and the next album they do is all about trying to find their sound and solidify what it is that they've been doing. So yeah. This points perfectly to it. So before we move on, then, let me just give you a little bit of background over Robbie, okay?
Please.
So he was born an only child on July the 5th in 1943. His mother, Rosemarie, was Cayuga and Mohawk, and she was raised on the Six Nations of the Grand River Reserve, southwest of Toronto. And in his teens, his parents split up, and then she told him that actually his dad wasn't his biological dad. So I don't know whether they ever met. So
blimey.
Yeah. And so he had that to deal with in his head. And then he had his first band, Little Caesar and the Consuls. Yeah. He used to play at local teen dances. And then Robbie and the Rhythm Chords. But then when they went to see the film Forbidden Planet, they changed it to Robbie and the Robots.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't? Exactly. This is what I was thinking. And then they formed a band called The Swades with a pianist called Scott Cushney. And that's when Ronnie Hawkins came along and he jammed with them for a bit. And then he got Scott playing piano on tour with him, but he employed Robbie as a roadie.
Yeah.
And then the bass player left and Scott said, why don't you get Robbie on bass? Then he went from bass to the guitar, and that's really how that all started. Now, one thing he was saying in an interview that he didn't realise, this Robbie did not realise, that Muddy Waters and all the other guitarists at that time were actually using slides. So he said he tried for years to work on developing a vibrato technique equivalent to a slide.
Right. Now, you see, I didn't know this. This is a little bit of information you've dug up and you've now shocked me with
glee.
It because I'm looking at it and I should know this. Right, okay.
Well, no, but it's not wide known. You have to really delve into like a dusty old interview. No, it's not common knowledge particularly at all.
But you know something, it makes ultimate sense, you know, because that bottleneck thing, I can get it. That's really interesting.
Well, you know, and the thing is, it's not unusual because... like for you, when you were learning, when you started playing guitar at 16, you had to like slow the tapes down, but there was no YouTube, so you didn't know for years how whereabouts or what, you had to just kind of play it by ear, weren't you? Playing all these chords where you're doing the splits halfway up and down the neck.
Yeah, because I didn't realise there was things with open tuning.
Yeah.
And you know, when you get an open tuning, everything's a lot easier when you're playing, certainly the Led Zeppelin stuff, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, this is just part of the time, really. So there you go, Robbie Robinson.
Well, you know, just talking about the Hawks.
Yeah.
This morning I was chatting to a guy on Mastodon who posted a Roy Buchanan video.
Ah.
And apparently Roy Buchanan was also in the Hawks for a bit, and Robbie Robertson took a lot of his style from it. Now, I never got Roy Buchanan because, I thought it was a bit nonsense, really. Everybody said how great he was. All I remember was the fact that when Big Jim Sullivan, who I worked with for a bit, legendary Big Jim Sullivan, he went to see him in America. This is Big Jim, went to see Roy Buchanan, and Roy Buchanan put his back to him the whole whole gig so he couldn't steal his licks. So there you are. So that's when. But anyway. But apparently, Robert Robertson took a lot from old Roy Buchanan.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Where a man might find a bed. He just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said. looking for a place to hide. When I saw Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey Carmen, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I gotta go, but my friend can stick around.
Take a load off Fanny, take a load.
Moses, there's nothing you can say. It's just old Luke, and Luke's waiting on a judgment day. Well, Luke, my friend, what about young Anna Lee? He said, do me a favor, son, won't you stay and keep Anna Lee company?
Take a load off.
He said, I will fix your rat if you take Jack, my dog. I said, wait a minute, Chester, you know I'm a peaceful man. He said, that's okay, boy, won't you feed me when you can?
Yeah, take a load off, Fanny, take a load.
Wait, from the debut studio album Music from Big Pink, released on July the 1st in 1968 on the Capitol record label. It was also released as a single that peaked at number 63 on the Billboard Hot 100 singles charts in the US. Hot! It was a bigger hit elsewhere, actually. It peaked at number 35 in Canada and number 21 in the UK. And, of course, they played Woodstock on the 17th of August 1969, so the song became more popular because they played it then. And also it was included in the film Easy Rider.
Great film.
Yeah. I love that song.
Sad ending. You know, Easy Rider. I always remember that. You know, right. It just come across now. real great. Now, that isn't a mess.
No.
You know, and perhaps, no, I wasn't flippant at all when I talked about this song before, because it was, but this is certainly isn't. It's really beautifully recorded. And this is the essence of Canadiana. And the fact that, you know, of course, as I said earlier on, we're not going to call it Americana anymore, because it was developed in Canada by these Canadian dudes. And what I love about it is the fact that the vocals are all over the place. When you listen to the backing vocals, it's almost like at the end there, it looks like he can't quite read the lyrics, and he sort of mumbles a little bit. I think it's Leaving Home singing on the left hand side of the mix. But those drums, you only get that tom sound and that kick drum sound with an analog tape machine. And I don't care what anybody says, it's the only way to get that sound. So, you know, line up, ring me up, come and visit us at the studio and talk about it. But in my opinion, it's marvellous, you know. And the guitar and that piano, you know, when it comes in, it's really beautifully arranged. And they've obviously really got the shit together in that small, short period intervening between when working with Bob Dylan and doing this record.
Well, they were saying, actually, so another bit of this interview that Robbie was saying is that it all sort of started to congeal or get in together, and they started to get this alchemy together when they rented this house at 56 Parnassus Lane, a.k.a. Big Pink.
Yeah.
And it was called Big Pink because it had a pink siding on it. And it was, and it all happened, the magic happened in the basement there in West, now I don't know how you pronounce this, Saugerties, New York. And I've just looked for map directions to Woodstock, and it's 13 minutes away from Woodstock.
Is that right?
Yeah, and 13 minutes away from the Levon Helm Studios.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it's just right around the corner. And what I don't think we all realise then as well, that so think about the guys, and then Robbie Robertson met David Geffen. And this isn't in any of the interview. The written stuff. Mm-hmm. And they met, and he wanted to meet him, and anyway, he ended up sort of saying, you know, I want to work with you, I want to do all these different things. And so so you've got record industries really.
Geffen was working for Capitol at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah. And what happened as well is that Bob Dylan's manager got them a record deal at Capitol because they were the Hawks at the time, and at one point they were going to be called the Crackers. I know. And so what happened then is they got this contract, so they managed to lure Levon Helm back into the band because he was off working on Oil Rigs.
Mm.
So they rented this house together, and then Robbie was saying that when they went downstairs, he said, I saw it. I knew this was the place. I knew where the organ was going to go. And he said, this is it. So they knew they had this space that they could create it, and they'd been working for a while, and they'd been on the road, you know, and so obviously with Levon coming back into the mix, and then Bob Dylan had a motorcycle accident, and so he was hanging out with them as well. So between them all, you can see this cross-pollination between some journalists say that maybe that there was this cross-pollination where Dylan influenced the lyrics.
Well, the lyrics on this are really, really good. And Robbie Robertson wrote this, didn't he? That's right.
But also, and then you've got the influence from the band, really, when you've got the basement tapes that Bob Dylan released, which features the band. So you've got this whole, because it was Albert Grossman who was Dylan's manager who got the deal. So it's like, again, who you know, and who do you trust, and that chemistry in the room between people. And it makes me so excited to think about the time that they had when they did that, you know. Mates just hanging out and just experimenting and finding their sound.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, also, of course, this album and the whole Canadiana movement actually influenced Eric Clapton very much, because when he was with Cream, he left Cream because he'd heard the band and he wanted to be in the band. That's what he wanted. He wanted to do that thing. And when he left, of course, you know, he created Blind Faith, and he was working with Delaney and Bonnie and Derek and the Dominoes, of course.
Of course,
and
yeah.
his own debut album were very much more, you know, I'm going to call it Americana, you know, even though it is Canadian. But because that's what he wanted, because that's what he heard. Because he never, I mean, Eric Clapton always wanted to be a blues, he wanted to be a straight up blues guitar player, and then he ended up in the Arbor, he left there, and he went into Cream, and he ended up being a rock guitar player, and then he left there and went back to sort of this Americana and blues thing again.
Isn't it interesting, though, that you can change your genre, as in you develop as an artist, as a musician. You don't have to just be this one colour, this one thing for the whole of your musical career.
Absolutely.
corn in the fields and listen to the rice when the wind blows across the water. King harvest is surely come.
I work for the union, 'cause she's so good to me, and I'm bound to come out on top. That's where she said I should be. I will hear every word the prospers say, for he's the one who hands me down that way. Looks like this time I'm gonna get to stay. I'm a union man now all the way.
The smell of the leaves from the magnolia trees in the meadow. King harvest is surely come.
A dry summer then come fall, which I depend on most of all. Hey rainmaker, can you hear the call? Please let these crops grow.
On the edge of town, King harvest has surely come.
Last year this time was no joke. My whole barn went up in smoke. Our horse Jethro, well, he went mad. I can't ever remember things being that bad. Then here come a man with a paper and pen, telling us our hard times are about to end. And then that they don't give us what we like. He said, Ben, that's when you gotta go on strike.
Corn in the fields, listen to the rice when the wind blows across the water. King harvest is surely come.
Band, King Harvest has surely come. Always abruptly ends that song. It sounds like they just sort of run out of steam at the end. Anyway, originally appeared as the final track on their second album, The Band, also known as The Brown Album. Why? Because it's brown. Just to understand the timing of all, this was released on September the 22nd, 1969 on Capitol Records, a few days before The Beatles' Abbey Road, which was released on the 26th of September 1969. And the song is credited solely to guitarist Robbie Robertson. And this, I think, is part of the beginning or the continued dispute between him and Levon Helm, as we'll talk about in a minute. Now, that certainly isn't a mess.
No, it sounds like the guitar sounds like it's a chicken.
Yeah.
It's like a farm, very farm-like sounds.
Well yeah, because
scratchy.
He was using his Telecaster, I think, I think it's Telecaster again. All very, very clean sounds. But again, his guitar solo at the end, it's not like a flashy, it's not.
No.
It's appropriate, and his chord work's really lovely and stuff. But there, the interface between the Hammond and the bass and the guitar and the vocals, it's just great. It is delicious, yeah. And it's a fantastic song. One of a classics of Americana or Canadiana.
Now, let me just, I'm going to have to stop talking to you about this, right? Okay, so we're talking about Americana. I think when you think about it, he was Robbie, being Canadian, could see America were in a different way that Americans could, because Americans grew up with it, lived with it. It's right in front of their face. Sometimes it's hiding in plain sight, right there. You get so used to it, you can't really see. You can't see that or the character in that, because it's the way the world's always been. And I think they say with his writing skills is that he collected stories of what was really going on, because he could see it, because he was an American. So it stood out to him. And yeah. I think what he did was collect these stories. You know, instead of inventing them, he was just collecting life.
And, of course, Stephen Stills, Canadian, and Neil Young, Canadian.
Canadian.
All sort of that. Yeah.
So that's an edge.
And the most important thing is is my favourite producer of all time, who we're going to mention a bit later on.
Yes.
Daniel Lanois, of course, is Canadian. And it is absolutely clear that he's got an awful lot of inspiration from these recordings, you know, because when you listen to his later work and his drum sounds and everything else, there's definitely some, you know, he's been certainly steeped in this stuff.
I nearly grew up in Canada because my parents were going to emigrate.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't. I wouldn't have met you.
I know, that's a bit weird, isn't it? But just to think of a whole new life that you could have had if your parents had gone, yeah, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, well, looking into it and not doing it. But there you go.
Talk to me about this album.
What about it? Okay, well, it's been viewed as a concept album. Yeah, with the songs, of course, focusing on people, places and the traditions associated with the older version of Americana. See?
Yeah, okay.
See, there you go. Mm. So you've got these themes of the night they drove old Dixie down and Jawbone. And what I love about this one as well, you know when you have like this way, the way that they had the Big Pink when they were in the basement?
Yeah.
Well, they tried recording this album, the second album, right, in a studio in New York, and it just wasn't happening. So they went and rented the pool house of a home in the Hollywood Hills that was owned by Sammy Davis Jr. Before that, Judy Garland used to live there. And they wanted this kind of pool clubhouse feel. So isn't it funny that they couldn't function in these big sort of ordained studios? They actually had to go in and hijack a house, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, that's what we've done.
I know, that's what we've done.
Yeah, because at the moment we're in a basically a domestic house, but it just happens to have a big room that we use for
with a tiki bar in the middle.
For a studio. But that is the other thing about Lanois. If you notice, he doesn't like studios. No. He always moved around, and like with U2 and
Teatro.
Peter Gabriel. So he was recording in a barn. He's done lots of work outside, you know. So you just wonder, don't you?
You just wonder. You know?
Just for land.
On Cripple Creek, a track from the legendary triple album The Last Waltz, which was released on April the 7th in 1978. There's also a fantastic DVD movie.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those classic...
Martin Scorsese, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, along with Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads, he's probably one of the best rockumentaries ever, really. You know, it's so fantastic.
Well, when we first got together, that's what I remember watching that in France.
We did indeed. That's
and
right.
I was just, I stood up. Remember, we were dancing. Yeah. We were like, oh, God, this is great.
Fantastic. So the gig was held on American Thanksgiving Day on November 25th, 1976, at the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco.
San Fran.
And the incredible thing about this record is it didn't do all that well.
No.
Because if you think about it, 1978, punk had happened, you know, in England. So it was all good, and all these old Americana guys. But the cast, you know, the people who were on it, Bob Dylan was on it. Ronnie Hawkins, the first, you know, Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks from the first track. Bob Dylan, Paul Butterfield, Bobby Charles, Eric Clapton, Neil Diamond, Emmylou Harris, Dr. John, Joni Mitchell, Van Morrison, Ringo Starr, Muddy Waters, Ronnie Wood and Neil Young.
Whoa, I know. What
plus
a
Staples, and there's lots of other things went on as well. But it was just an amazing. And I remember, and I did watch this for the first time, you know, a long, long, long time ago. And I listened to the record. It's a three... disc vinyl, and I've got it. I'm sure we've got it somewhere.
Got it, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
We do
we're gonna dig
it, yeah.
that out actually,
yeah, yeah.
And we should have a listen to it tomorrow. Yeah, brilliant though. Absolutely great record. And this is they really are at the height here because here you can hear everything's happening. You know, the organ, the piano, and that clavinet with the wah wah.
Yeah, what was that about?
It was the first time that it's ever happened. Garth Hudson actually recorded it. It was this because it's originally from the Brown album. And he, that, you know, and that was, he did it live, you know, on the Brown album. Fantastic. Because all, that's the thing, everything recorded that you hear was done live. And the way that we played ages ago, apparently it took, I think it was like 40 takes due to the fact they couldn't get those vocals right. You know, and
the harmonies.
But, you know, but that's what it's all about, just playing them live. And it's all together beautiful.
And you know what? So I don't know what else to add to that.
Yeah, it's just an incredible record. Robbie Robertson, Somewhere Down the Crazy River, released as a single in 1987 from his debut solo studio album called Robbie Robertson. on Geffen Records. It reached number 15 in the UK singles charts, 24 in the Billboard mainstream rock tracks, and won Robertson and Daniel Lanois, producer, the Canadian Producer of the Year Award in 1989.
Daniel Lanois. Now, I didn't know that he worked on this track, but this has taken me like some sort of time travel back to my youth.
Is that right?
Yeah. The sound, the feel, it's really weird. It's like, I remember this song. It's like, I would have been, 18 or something?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, it's the first time I'd heard Robbie Robertson, because at that time, had never crossed my path, because it was American, you know, and all that. I just didn't get it. I was into rock music. I didn't get this. So this is the first introduction I had to.
Isn't it so different, though, as well, compared to, like, the band stuff? And he's coming out as a solo album, just kind of thinking, my God, man. That sort of deep voice, sexy chat.
The interesting thing, though, is that listening to this and his other solo work, it's nowhere near as good as the band stuff. Where his mojo was. And I think his mojo was with the band, those people all working together, and that's where it came from. And talking about Daniel Lanois, which I'm going to do, of course, I always do, my favourite producer of all time, Canadian, he picks up all sorts of people from other bands that he's working with, and sticks them all together and glues them all together. And on this record, there's people from U2. In fact, the whole band is from U2. Bono, everybody's on this record. Peter Gabriel, you know, and also...
That's crazy.
Yeah. And, of course, Peter Gabriel's band, because on this is Manu Katchi, the Parisian drummer, who's one of my favourite drummers of all time, Tony Levin, who plays with Peter Gabriel, of course. Sammy Bodine.
Yeah, I just looked him up, actually, because I wondered, walking down a crazy river. He's from the Bodines. He's worked with Bowie. He's actually, I think he's been quite prolific, but I'd never really heard about him before. But I just thought his voice was quite unusual.
That drum sound. You see, that's it. Tape. It just sounds fantastic, you know. Manu Katchi's a great drummer. But the great thing about this is the fact that how it was written is that, again, that Lanois got a tip from Brian Eno, and he'd actually come up with this Suzuki Omnicord, this plastic, horrible-sounding thing, and he gave it to Robbie Robertson, and he was playing, and apparently the lines, the chords and everything came from that, and he created those chords, and then he wrote the song, you know.
Well, what was quite interesting, so after the band, just to sort of conclude this kind of journey with Robbie Robertson as well, he started writing film scores and work with Martin Scorsese. Mm. So this is really what he did as an artist. He sort of translated, and just that was his natural progression, really, into writing in that way behind the scenes. And so his last recorded work was a soundtrack to Scorsese's film Killers of the Flower Moon. And his last album, solo album, he did put another one out in 2019, was called Cinematic. And there's a documentary, Once Were Brothers, Robbie Robertson and the Band, that he released as well. So I think it was just a conclusion of everything, or to sort of wrap the story up, you know.
Well, you know, I'd urge you to check him out more. I mean, I know there's a YouTube video kicking around about the band and recording. There's a big interview with Robbie Robertson and stuff. It's certainly worth checking out. But, you know, sadly passed away last week, and this is what the show's all about today. But, of course, that is the end of the show.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. So, now, over the past few weeks, we've been talking about our new album and playing tracks from different parts of the country where we're performing in October and September. You can check us out at starlight-campbell.com. And this, the blog, which we do a written blog, Susie's done a very interesting one recently on bass. You can check that out at vibes.starlight-campbell.com.
And our new album, Starlight One, is still available to pre-order. It's released on the 1st of September on Supertone Records, and you can get it from our website, starlight-campbell.com.
So there you are. Thank you, Robbie Robertson. Good night.